So tonight I'd like to talk about meditation, yet once again, and also some aspects of mindfulness. We understand very clearly that the practice invites us to be present. And from that quality of presence, something very alive comes forth. The Thai forest abbot who now is on retreat, actually, retired meaning, he, Achan Sumedho, he says, the past is a memory, the future is the unknown, now is the knowing. So we really have a sense that the reality is happening in each moment, in the now. And he asks, is that so complicated? It turns out it is. I don't know what kind of day you've had, but it's not so easy to be just connecting with the now, with the present. Why? Because of habit. There's so much busyness on one side, right? We are really very busy in our lives. And then the other aspect, which we can very clearly begin to sense, is reactivity. Reactivity is something that we may not be aware of until we really face ourselves. So we are going to be able to begin to sense what is happening on those two levels. It's amazing how the mind has an ability, a capacity to connect with the experience, including that reactivity. It has such power in relationship to noticing, to being present, to really include all that is manifesting within our inner experience, but also inclusive of what is happening in relationship to the outside world. Yet we have years of habits. What is called in the teaching conditioning, meaning that we are usually in a track, on a path, which is exactly that we feed more the reactivity and the busyness than we do feed the quality of presence. So it takes a training, and this is exactly what we're training in. There's an interesting story when the Buddha talked about finding this quality of presence. And as you may know, he struggled many years, right, in relationship to finding where is the place of freedom, how can one find it. And so he was very clearly in sensory world when he was a prince, and he indulged to a certain extent in that sensory world and noticed that there wasn't really freedom there. And then he saw that he practiced with a lot of determination, very tough practices, right, all the way to asceticism and really even, you can say, self-mortification. And he saw that that was another extreme, and he wasn't free there. And so he began to question, and he really looked inside and said, when was the moment where I really felt this quality of freedom? And there's a beautiful description of this, where he is remembering a moment when he is a child, and he's under a tree, and he was very clearly present, not struggling to find anything, but very, very aware. And in that moment, he remembered that there was a quality of freedom, of openness of mind, of heart, of really being in touch with life completely, fully. And it said that it's from that place of remembering that calling that he found what is called the middle path, meaning not to struggle overly, not overly efforting, and yet not indulging. This quality of middle path, which helps us stay awake in the moment, awake with momentary experience. And then he based, it said, a lot of his practice on this very clear moment. It's the foundation for our practice, this quality of presence. So we meditate to come home. In that connection, we rediscover the value of our own condition. We rediscover what it means to be completely, fully aware, present, without needing to have something else than what is presented to us. And that's very special, actually. Because what happens is that the reactivity is constantly making us move out of that moment. And we can probably sense that from experience today. So mostly we as humans are very lost. And it's no different today than it was 2,600 years ago, which is incredible. I think most probably it's a little more today because of all the very clear ways. I mean, life probably was a little more simple, and it hasn't become more simple. So we are, as humans, really very much at lost in this world. Lost, of course, in the activity, lost also in the virtual world, lost in the stories of our own mind, and sometimes also, and it's very interesting that the Asian masters, especially masters in Burma, would constantly say to us, "You've got so much education, you know so much." And with knowing so much, you cannot see clearly. Like that the education, the high level of education that we have is somewhat a hindrance to the simplicity of clearly seeing what is manifesting. And what he meant by that was that we lose the freshness, the quality of that mystery of life to just be with the unknown, because we know so much, right? And so we naturally have, of course, fantastic abilities and skills, and it's wonderful to have them. It's not about not having them. I mean, it's really great. Yet, it may be something that we question where, when there is so much learning, are we losing something in relationship to touching ground with the truth, the peace of our own mind? So we refresh our mind, we become curious, we really touch upon ourselves with that intention to meet a little bit life, to be alive. This aliveness doesn't mean that it's a particular aliveness for or linked to a tradition. We are not at all interested in ism, even Buddhism. We are interested, and actually the Buddha himself was interested in the human condition. What is our condition? And how can we grow in understanding about that condition? And so this, of course, applies wherever we are on this planet. Whatever the values we have, these are human values. And how can we move from a place maybe of contraction, tightness, or suffering, to a place of ease, of well-being, of peace? And when the Buddha talked about himself in relationship to what he had realized, the only thing he was saying is, "I am awake." And that is the term for Buddha. I am the awakened one, meaning awake, really awake, not asleep, not confused, not lost in ignorance. So this is the invitation of meditation. Now, no doubt, there are different practices in meditation. Okay? We learn different skills. And here in this Vipassana meditation that we're receiving for these few days is naturally born out of two qualities. One is tranquility, you can say, or stillness, and the other is insight, born in mindfulness, right? So these two come together, and I wanted to speak about this because I think there's often a confusion, and actually in both of the groups that I met with today, there was some kind of, I wouldn't say confusion, but just inquiry and investigation about the idea that we have in relationship to meditation. See, like, meditation means emptying the mind. I said, no. It's not about emptying the mind. Meditation is about calm. Yes, somewhat, but not only. Calm is not the end. Meditation is about making the mind peaceful and not having agitation. And I said, no, it's not. Agitation can completely be a way to understanding peace, wisdom, if we're clearly knowing that agitation is present and we're free when it's present and it's possible. So then, of course, the question may arise then, if we say tranquility is on one side and then mindfulness on the other with wisdom, so why do we speak about tranquility? That's a very good question, right? Tranquility, you may have heard the term samatha, right? Samatha practice, which means calm, tranquility. This aspect we have been cultivating today in relationship to a certain level of presence where we can have a stability, meaning a tranquility, a stability of the attention, of the presence, to see clearly what's happening in the moment. What is present? What is happening? Because we're so lost. So you can use the term, this tranquility is really equivalent or synonymous to non-distraction. Right? Non-distraction or non-dispersion. Which, when I said lost, it means dispersed. Right? Disconnected. So here we gather the energy. And there's a real sense of collectedness of that quality of presence. Not scattered, not looking outwardly. This is why we're sitting in this way, to be able to stay stable. And of course, stability of body helps the stability of mind. So we allow ourselves to settle in the attention, and the mind then can be aware moment by moment of what it is that is present. This is the role of tranquility. Nothing else. So it's not a goal. Right? It's a means. Because what is happening actually is we want to see beneath the surface. And a very clear way that we practice meditation, and actually when meditation starts, Vipassana meditation, when it starts is when we begin to have a connection, a contact with direct experience. And it takes a training to move from the place where we're constantly thinking about experience to actually experiencing experience, living the experience. meaning that most of the time we're conceptualizing, interpreting, commenting, giving value, judging. Right? So this is happening at the level of thought. So we will begin there because we're so used to live in our thoughts, in the world of mind and thinking, that this is where we begin. But actually, there's an interest to really deepen the connection, to feel, to experience, to notice, to be aware of what is happening, not from the place of concept, but from the place of actual experience. And this is why we're developing a clear connection, knowing what's happening even at the level of body. Because body awareness is a very great embodiment to actually stay a little bit more connected. So it's not about creating the perfect calm. If we have this idea, it's a wrong idea. It's not about creating. Of course, we like calm. We don't like agitation. But no doubt, agitation is as much of value in this Vipassana world as calm, even more. Maybe we learn more with agitation than with just calm. Because calm is very pleasant, so we just take it in and maybe are attached to the calm. This happens, right? No doubt that we can have moments when we are appreciating what it is happening. So one teacher really described this quite well. He says, this meditation practice involves an intimate relationship with experience, with ourselves. Great intimacy is involved. And intimacy means just a closeness of connection. That's what it means. He continues by saying, it has nothing to do with achieving perfection or achieving some absolute state or other. It is purely allowing ourselves to meet experience as it is, examining our actual experience. So this is what we've done all day, right? This, we come into this mode of being where we just experience one breath, one step, one foot on the floor, maybe the sound of the wind, maybe the freshness of the air on our face, the taste of the rice. Very clearly, there is life happening. So in that moment, we understand that meditation is not about escaping life, but really coming into contact, very close contact with life. And we don't need to leave anything behind. So this is what's so precious. So much of the time we think, we got to get rid of this, 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 this. We don't need to get rid of anything. It's much more simple than that. And of course, this takes learning. Actually, what we do is constantly escaping life. So how do we escape life? By trying to get rid of things we don't like. This is how we escape. And escaping is what we usually do with all the tricks that we have, all the strategies that we have in place, and naturally we all have our own. And yet we see that it's not really working in terms of making ourselves be more peaceful and happy. There's a limit. Right? So the meditation is saying, actually, show up. Come into contact with everything that is happening, with whatever life is bringing to you. So we arrive. How do we arrive? With this quality of connection we attempted to learn from today. This place of being with the anchor, for example, or taking a place of ground is extremely helpful. Yet it's not the aim, right? It's just a way that we are moving from concept, ideas, thoughts, to a level of direct experience. Right? Now, it's not about doing the breath. And here again, there was a question about that this afternoon. Like a technique for breathing. It's not about the breath. It's about being aware. So it's natural. It's not like yoga where you really emphasize a certain type of breath, how to make the right breath, or not make a type of breath which isn't helpful. Breath is breath here. Very natural, very spontaneous. One moment it will be short, the next moment it will be long, shallow, deep, however it is. We meet it as it is, not trying to make it any certain way, and especially not trying to force it, because this creates tension. So there's a real way that we stabilize our movement, natural movement, as we connect gently, and I've been emphasizing that quality, and very clearly the mind begins to cooperate. It begins to really be interested in what is happening in relationship to that body experience. Actually, it can even find some place of peace within that very quality. So this is the steadiness that we are talking about. And yet, we're not trying to stay firm on that ground of anchor. It's not about eliminating the other experiences. If we were to do only tranquility practice, then we would put at bay, it's called, right? Just avoid, not even be concerned with what else is happening, maybe a thought or a sound, just breath. But this is not Vipassana practice. So we have a sense of stability, a sense of ground in the body, because it's just more simple than in the mind. And from there, there's also this invitation to include whatever other experience may come around. If there's a thought, aware of thought. A sound, aware of sound. Hearing, tasting. So there's a way that there's a blend of these two qualities. Steadiness, presence, grounding. If there's too much happening, like maybe sometimes we're overwhelmed, an emotion is too strong, and it takes us by surprise, we come into this mode of feeling the anchor, the breath, or the buttock, or the hands, to stabilize. So this is why this ground of presence is neutral. It's not intense in any way. It has a purpose that when we deepen our practice, our meditation, we really are allowing ourselves to also have some moments where there's a place of rest. Right? So it's both. Yeah? Not exclusive of other experiences, yet developing a sense of being fully and wholeheartedly here, simple with any experience. So you hear two things here. One is you can really emphasize, connect, and sustain the awareness, the mindfulness with one experience, the anchor that we've chosen, and we can also steady the mindfulness with changing experiences. It's both, right? One moment it will be one, the other moment it will be the other. With thoughts, it's a little more tricky. Right? Because very, very likely thoughts that just take us. They're so, so, so seductive, the thoughts. So pleasant most of the time. Sometimes not pleasant at all. But it's true that even if there's worry, we are trying to figure out with the thoughts. So this is why we don't begin with thoughts, but more with body. Slowly, slowly, we will be also very skilled in relationship to being aware of thinking. When we are aware of a thought, we're meditating. When we're lost in that thought, we're lost in the thought. See the difference? So this we learn progressively. So as I said, there are only, and the Buddha talked about in the sutra, what is it that we can experience? That's a very good question. What is it that we experience in meditation? And he talked about a sutra which is named the All. All that we can experience. Six types of experience. It can become very complex because we're very inventive and we like to be complex. But six types of experience, it's really great. Five physical sense doors, right? Tasting, smelling, touching, hearing, and seeing. That's it. And the sixth sense door is happening through the mind. We're thinking and feeling in relationship to emotions, which is, of course, the mental states. So this is what is happening, really, quite frankly, on the level of reality. So this is the Buddha speaking. He says, maybe this is paraphrased, but this is coming from the Buddha. In this fathom-long body, meaning in our body, the whole universe is discovered. It is enough to be in contact with this body and learn about the universe by being present and connecting with our experience on a momentary level. The whole universe. So this mindfulness is really what we're cultivating. So there's on one side that aspect of steadiness of mind, which one can call tranquility, just to come from the place of being lost, distracted, to being aware, then naturally from the place of concepts, ideas, we come into the connection of actual experience. And this is exactly what is happening at the level of meditation. So it's called mindfulness once we begin to really be with the direct experience. Right? And this quality of mindfulness is not a quality which is very extravagant. It's not complex. It's often called bare attention. When we begin to interpret, like if we have a story, story is interpretation, right, about what's happening. We're not mindful. We're interpreting. We're putting a commentary, so we're conceptualizing. So this quality of mindfulness is much more simple than that. Actually, it's mindfulness that makes us realize when we're making up stories about what is happening. The storytelling mind, right? So I'm sure you noticed a few stories that you've had today, right? And when we begin to be aware of the story and we're mindful of it, we wake up. Wake up. Wow, we're no longer lost in that story. So very easily and said simply, because there's many things to say about this, but what happens is we constantly put an overlay on top of the experience. And in a very real way, how we can understand coming from concept to reality is that we confuse the two. It's not about not having the interpretation. Maybe we can interpret, right? But it's not to confuse one with the other. And one of the examples that can be given very easily is this example. Right? You've heard this quite a few times today, no? We hear bell, and I'm sure we've had, a few of you have had, oh, this is nice. It's the end of the sitting, right? There's an interpretation, right? Quite a many of you are smiling. Yes, it means something when you hear the bell, right? There's a meaning to it. But mindfulness also has this sense, we don't hear bell, we hear sound, we hear vibration. That's what we hear. Then we think this is the end of the sitting, right? So we constantly confuse the two. This is how, incredibly so, we are losing ourselves in the interpretation of our world. Not only in relationship with ourself, but relationship with other beings. This person thinks this of me. No, probably not. Interpretation. So this can go very, very far, of course, right? But a moment of recognition of hearing a sound, hearing bird, for example, we don't hear bird. We hear sound. And we think bird. So because we're so inclined to put concepts, name, label things, we live on that level of conceptualizing constantly, and we lose touch with something very precious. Something really very precious, actually. The freshness, the curiosity. This is very valuable to begin to have this quality of bare attention be part. So it's not about not thinking. See, we go right, okay, so I shouldn't be thinking. No, it's fine. You may notice, oh, there's thinking about the bird that's singing outside, but you don't miss on hearing that actual experience. Miss on tasting the food when you're actually tasting it. So there's just a fullness, much more fullness of life, a richness. In the same way, when we are speaking very directly, feeling a body sensation, and I say, okay, yes, I'm feeling my knee, or I'm feeling my back. Actually, we're not feeling knee or back. Knee or back are names that we're giving to this experience of maybe some pressure, some tightness, some type of sensation, whatever the sensation may be, right? Which is the experience. When we say we feel knee, we are at a distance. So intimacy of connection means that we may have the word, the thought, I'm feeling my knee, but we just leave that on the side. And we actually experience the sensation. To be with the bare attention. That's mindfulness. Right? At that level, we have mindfulness happening with the actual experience. And we can also have mindfulness of the thought, I'm feeling my knee. Right? It doesn't prevent us to have mindfulness on that level as well. But we don't have a confusion between the two. Okay, so it's really helpful to sense this. So now just a few words about the specific quality of mindfulness. Because it has come into the field, I don't know, in Finland, if you have a lot of stress reduction and all these practices that have to do with well-being, which is wonderful, actually. I'm really noticing how supportive this is. But in the practice of vipassana, mindfulness is just more subtle than just being present, you see? So I think that more and more are we to have some interest, us teachers, to really convey the depth of what this quality of mindfulness means. I mean, this is our role. in a way, so we don't miss out on the depth. So naturally, mindfulness leads to insight and liberation, right? So it's not just being present. We start there, right? We have to connect, and I talked about that for quite some time now, right? Being present in the now. Yet the prospect is insight and liberation. It's a path towards awakening, right? And it means that there are different elements that are working along with this quality of presence. So actually what we are practicing is, and the word bhavana is actually the word for meditation, and the word for meditation, it's not really kind of meditation contemplation or even kind of a sense where we are in prayer or just kind of receptive to receive something from a higher prospect. It's not all that. It's a cultivation. It's as simple as that. It means cultivation.
Can somebody translate what that word?
Can somebody translate cultivation? To cultivate. So cultivation means that we are actually being quite active, right? It's not passive. Some people think, oh, it's just passive, right? Because I say relax, just receive, more valuable. But there's an engagement in this path towards the way that we are being with experience. We need some commitment because otherwise nothing is really happening. So we are, in a way, engaging a cultivation of mindfulness, a presence of mind that is helping us to stay in tune with experience as it unfolds. So this quality of word of mindfulness means recollecting, meaning remembering, right? But not remembering the past. Remembering to be present. This is the definition of that term, mindfulness, right? Recollection of the present moment. So this is what we've been doing all day, non-distraction, non-dispersion, right? And this word of sati, of mindfulness, is constantly present in the teachings in relationship to the meditation. What we cultivate principally mindfulness, right? It's the direct path to liberation. Why? Because it's the path towards the end of sorrow and lamentation, of struggle, of pain. This is why. So it's not so much about a religion or even a philosophy. It's really about a very direct path that we can practice, not only in a circumstance which is very special like this one, but in our daily life. We can actually have this happen in a very ordinary situation, any moment, right? But now, one of the functions of mindfulness has a wholesome quality. Mindfulness is always a wholesome quality. Do you know what wholesome means? No. Can you please translate wholesome? Thank you so much. So it's a human quality that is wholesome, right? It's a quality that invites us to really investigate or inquire or be interested in our behavior. And this is how we join, in a way, the fact that it is an activity. It's not just a contemplation. It's how am I in relationship to this very situation? How am I behaving? How am I responding? How am I receiving? So there's an activity, and we also have this clear sense of mindfulness, knowing how we respond. So this is why it's wholesome, right? There's a need for some connection, and then a need where we understand that mindfulness has an aspect of wisdom. It leads to wisdom, to clearly see what is wholesome, what is the sense of purpose. Is it helpful? Does it serve? Or does it not serve? So there's a context, you see. It's not just attention. There's a whole context which is clearly manifesting here. So this is the practice of mindfulness. One ingredient with mindfulness is that it has a function where we also have perception. What do we perceive? What's perception? Perception is the ability to remember. It's like the storage house, right? Like very simple perception. It's perception, it's not consciousness. It's perception that helps us know that this is a bell ringer. I don't know the word in English for this. This is a clock. This is red and this is black, right? It's perception that helps us remember the names. It was so sweet the other day. I have a very small nephew. He's 2 years old. And it's amazing how many times he can repeat a word to learn the word, right? He says, dog, dog, dog. 100 times he can repeat dog. Well, he'll know the dog's name right now. And not only the word dog, but the dog's name. That's perception at work. That we don't need to learn every single time. Imagine if we didn't have that function of the mind, it would be crazy. We wouldn't even recall things. So perception is very helpful. But it also is tricky. Why? Because it's perception that gives us the impression that there is continuity. That there isn't change. Like, this being is born some 50 years back, right? And of course, there's a continuity we can remember. I can remember my childhood. I can remember when I was a teenager. And so, I have a sense of continuity, right? Which we all have. And it serves its purpose on one side. Yet, because we can memorize, right? We have a sense of past. Yes, of course, past was there. And on a certain level, yes, past is there, right? From birth to now. So we tie the events together and we hold ourselves in time. And therefore we can make sense. This happened in 1995. This happened in 2002. This happened in 2007. Right? And so we have this sense of link, of continuity. So we associate all these events, right? And we even compare, right? This is better, this is not better. So what happens there is that we have an ongoing way that we have a feeling, because we have perception, of continuity, and we have a feeling of over and over and over again. Habit mind. And this is exactly what is called samsara. You know that word? Right? That word which means kind of a way that we go in circles. And we feel that we lose the quality of life, of freshness of life, because it's always the same. And that compulsion propels us to do actually similar things until we wake up. The habit-driven mode. And this is why we feel that life is so boring. This is exactly what happens, right? Ah, it's a texture of going around, a feeling of, we've seen this already, you know, and I've seen this already. And therefore, it feels quite boring. But when we give perception kind of some value, there's contact, we feel experience, and what I feel, I perceive, and then I can really give value and sense that perception, which gives more emphasis on mindfulness and cut through the chain of continuity. So that same function of perception can go into habit-driven mode of conceptualizing, habit-driven, and just think about it again and again and again and again. Because what we think about, we tend to proliferate, or it can wake us up. And here, hopefully, we do wake up. We cut the chain of conditioning. It's so interesting because this happens, you know, at the level of the emotions, at the level of thought, level of body. So there's a real sense of purpose in relationship to finding home and finding a place where we are inclining in the direction of more freedom. Freedom from habit, freedom from compulsion, freedom from getting stuck. I lived that experience just the other day. I had a friend that was moving apartment, and I don't know if it's like that in Finland, but I was in a IKEA, you know, the Swedish brand, and it was crazy. I was just like going in circles, and they have a way to really make you do a path and go in circles in that shop, in that store. And my friend, who's a Dharma friend, said, "This is samsara." And I said, "Sure is. How are we going to get out?" And she said, "Mindfulness." And this is exactly what happened, you know. Brought a way that we woke up to reality and say, okay, now we stop and now we think and we have a context and wisdom. Wisdom at work. So we don't just follow the rote, right? The habit mode of and again and again and again. So there's a willingness with this mindfulness and perception where we can see freshly. We can really wake up and see freshly. And this is so juicy. I mean, it really gives so much energy, fresh energy. And actually, for those of us who have experience, of course, know this. You know, we wouldn't go on retreat again and again if we didn't have at least moments of this quality, where there's a lightness of heart, there's more energy, we refresh ourselves, we really feel life in a different way. So this is the prospect. So mindfulness here has a way that we are cultivating a quality of presence. That's the quality we begin with. But mindfulness, being always wholesome, has a very clear dimension of protecting the mind. Protecting the mind, protecting ourselves from what is unwholesome. So that's clearly a sense of wisdom. There's a clear comprehension. To meet this situation with awareness, to let go of what is unskillful, to let go of the habit mode, and to begin to sense what is helpful here. So we do have some investigation, actually. We do have some interest. It's not just, you know, like a cow that's present in a field. I'm taking that as an example because probably I'm Swiss. An English person would say sheep. But so there's a wholesome ingredient that we have, and that wholesome ingredient is metta. It's the care, the quality of caring. This is why we more and more speak of a caring attention, an attention which is leading to wisdom, to healing. And there are quite a number of images that the Buddha uses, actually. One of the images is exactly that, that when a surgeon will operate, he will know to what extent he has to open, right, the wound, and to clean and to clear. So there's definitely a quality of protection there, mindfulness. And then how and care, kindness, to what extent, right? So it's really, in a way, this mindfulness has discernment. It has intelligence, this is what I mean, right? So it's not just contemplation or passivity. In the same way, there's an image that the Buddha uses in a sense of protection, where there's this quality of care of a mother that will look over her child, right? What does the child need? And so mindfulness has this quality where we care. We know how to attend. There's close attention to protect ourselves. So we are aware, and then we begin to bring this quality, which I call the attitude. How are we aware? How are we in relationship to what is happening? And we develop this quality of awareness with wisdom. If there's a danger, we know how to avoid a danger. If we're not mindful, there's probably a way that we may not even know that there's a danger. So we know how to go into the protection. So it's really not only non-distraction. Mindfulness is much more than that. And the fact that it's being wholesome is very important. The last thing that I'm going to say is that we often speak about attention, right? And I have used this word. But it's true that there's attention, but it's a wholesome attention. You see? So there's a real sense of, in a way, leading to freedom, freedom from suffering, because of that quality, ingredient of care, kindness, protection, and wisdom, discernment. The example that's given is anybody can have attention. Just the other day, my friend got robbed in her car. I can tell you, this person was attentive, right? He wasn't mindful. So that's a very clear example. A thief can be attentive, but he's not mindful, right? There's really not this understanding. So we can really train in mindfulness on many levels. So there are differences, and I think it's helpful to know that there's a depth to this quality that we are cultivating in each moment. And it's not that complicated, but I think it's very helpful to not be too simplistic as well, right? That it's not just, okay, I'm attentive and what else? There's more to it than that, right? It's the basic training, but then there's how does the mind operate all the way to the end of suffering, to Nibbana, right? To liberation, that word of Nibbana being just the freedom from greed, hatred, and delusion. And I'll be talking about that tomorrow night. Okay? What is the root of suffering, the cause, and how does one come into a connection which leads all the way to liberation? Thank you for your attention, mindfulness, discernment.